everyone. You're listening to the Aviation Reporter, your podcast about everything related to airports, airlines, and aviation industry. In this episode, in collaboration with EMA Systems, you will hear a fascinating interview with Andreas Buschen, who is the Executive Director of CESAR 3 Joint Undertaking. We're going to have a great discussion with Jean-Luc Devisha. Let's give the floor to them.
Let me start by recalling what the CESAR 3 joint undertaking is about. So CESAR stands for Single European Sky Air Traffic Management Research. 3 means we are the third edition. We have officially started in December 2021. We have been established by European Union law, and we are working within the framework of Horizon Europe, which is the EU research program. And our joint undertaking is a public-private partnership, which brings together the European Union, Eurocontrol, and many organizations from the entire aviation value chain, including drones, new entrants, everybody. So in the end, we are having 55 members in our joint undertaking and more than 10 institutional partners working together with us. And our aim is to manage over the years from now until 2030, 1.6 billion euro investments in order to accelerate the modernization of air traffic management in Europe. And this is a combination of taxpayers' money from the European Union taxpayer and investment by the private members. The end goal, the overall objective is to have an inclusive, resilient, and sustainable digital European sky. So my personal pleasure is to be the executive director since months now. So I'm Andreas Buschen. I'm looking actually this month, May, back into 25 years working for the European Union. I have been 24 years in the European Commission and working since 2003 on transport matters. And I'm really a happy and proud executive director since 1st of July last year.
Thank you very much for that. And what I liked very much, of course, is that you already kind of addressed the sustainability topic, because that leads very nicely into my next question. It's one of the many challenges the aviation industry has to deal with currently. The question I had was, how is the joint undertaking addressing sustainability, and what kind of approach is it using to address this quite critical topic nowadays?
I think you are right, Jean-Luc, in stating that sustainability is a top priority for European aviation right now. And the sector, the ecosystem has admitted and has committed to deliver. It's a license for aviation to exist and to grow in Europe. And this applies to airports, airlines, air navigation service providers, Eurocontrol, everybody. And we are part of it. And definitely sustainability is one of our key topics. We are addressing this via different angles. First of all, it is commonly admitted and acknowledged that operational benefits from air traffic management improvements can make an immediate contribution to the reduction of CO2 emissions. The figures are somewhere up to 10% could be gained. And I'm pleased to indicate that we are having a lot of CESAR solutions, so results from our research, which will bring the benefits for sustainability for the airport, for the airline, for the air navigation service providers. And we are also happy to see that these solutions are starting to be picked up. But we need more, and we are doing more research on it. The greening of aviation is one of our 9 flagships, and we are having some projects which are looking into the way to improve the environmental impact of flying. And we are also having some of these projects at a rather high maturity level, so meaning very close to deployment. So this is definitely good news. I would like, if possible, also to stress, we have to be aware the greening of aviation is more than decarbonization. So actually, we're looking at a couple of different aspects of environmental aspects of sustainability. So it's a CO2, which is now very much on the public radar. And you have probably also seen the decisions the European Union has taken, refuel aviation, ETS for aviation. So there are a lot of legislative measures within the package of Fit for 55. But we have also other aspects. We have the noise aspects, where again, ADM procedures about the right angle of descent, secondary touchdown on the runway, whatever approaches, approach management can make a benefit to have less noise for the affected population. We also have local air pollution at airports, where again, going for electric solutions, electric taxiing, using of less, maybe the single engine for taxiing by the airplane, and all these kind of things are very good contributions to reduce local or to improve local air quality. And then a very important topic is a non-CO2, which we are all aware that aviation is also affecting the air by non-CO2 emissions, what we call the clouds there. And we are doing also research. And there it's more fundamental research still to really find out the interaction between the meteorological situation with the cloud formation, the super ice structure, whatever it is, and the airplane. And what are also the mitigation measures? Does it make sense to change the flight level of a plane? Does it make sense to reroute a plane? And what are then the trade-offs between more CO2 because you are flying at a less optimal flight level, or you're flying a longer route, so you are of course consuming more fuel, and by nature, by default, more CO2, but you might have much higher benefits from the avoiding of non-CO2 emissions. So this is something we are also looking into, and where we need more research and more academic consensus on what is the right way to tackle it.
No, good. That's a very, a very concise answer. So thank you very much for digging into that. And of course, also illustrating the different aspects, because like you said, we tend to focus most of the time on CO2 emissions. And that's what most people think when we talk about sustainability. Although, of course, it's a much wider subject than purely the emission subject. What I would also like to address and to ask was to get a bit more details about your corporate innovation model. It's in partially linked, of course, also to the sustainability efforts. I've seen that there is a lot of, let's say, a lot of things coming from that corporate innovation model, where you encourage startups to work with the industry and to find new solutions, including solutions to address the same issues as you just mentioned. Can you tell us a bit more about how you see that corporate innovation model?
Absolutely. We consider ourselves, or we are, the technological pillar of the Single European Sky Initiative to improve air traffic management in Europe. And our membership, like I said, we have 55 members from the entire aviation community, are bringing solid foundations, and they ensure that the program is responding to the needs of the sector. And to use one of the buzzwords in our EU research speak, it's about co-creation. So we are trying to use a very much a bottom-up approach that we are defining together the needs for research, and then to translate them into concrete projects, into concrete research activities, and to concrete deliverables. And we're doing this in a three-step approach. We are defining, developing, and deploying. And this is taking place under a strategic vision, which is the European Air Traffic Management Master Plan, which is not only a strategic vision how the sky should look like in 2040, but also having a roadmap, how do we get there? And in order to have a very good corporate innovation model, like you were asking, we are organizing open calls. So they are very inclusive, and indeed everybody can apply, and size doesn't matter. I mean, of course, we are having large companies, the well-known names. And if I start dropping one name now, all the others will say, you forgot me. So I better don't start quoting company names now, but I guess you have in mind who it is. And so we are having, of course, well-established players from academia to industry, both from within the EU, but even beyond the EU. But we are also open for business with very small and startups and new kids on the block. And I would like to stress, in particular, in the area of the drones and the new entrants and the eVTOLs, we are seeing a very volatile, but in a positive sense, a volatile community, which is very agile and pushing and interested in innovation. And we are happy to have them on board. Another angle of our corporate innovation model is the openness of results. All our results are open, are available at our internet, and we are even pleased to see them that they get exported beyond Europe. So our solutions are for worldwide use. Let me also say a word about our innovation pipeline, which again we think is a very comprehensive one, because we're having different strands, and we want to start very low in terms of maturity, early days, what we call exploratory research. The brilliant idea, the new thing which needs to be tested, checked, is it worthwhile? And after exploratory research, we go into a second phase, which we call industrial research, where we already look much more, is it fit for the sector? Is the sector as interested? What will it change in the sector? What will it improve? And most of our projects will come out at what we call TRL, Technological Readiness Level 6, which means they are ready for a deployment. They have been validated in a theoretical environment, and they can now be further processed in order to be really industrialized. But we have also discovered that we have to help these projects, these solutions, to go one step further. So therefore, our third element is now fast track, we call it, where we try to accelerate this innovation pipeline and bring the projects much quicker from exploratory research to deployment stage. And last but not least, we are using what we call demonstrators, which is a new type of projects where we are testing CSER solutions which have gone through research in an operational environment. We are combining a couple of them. For example, we are combining a couple of airport solutions in one big project, and we are testing them in a very concrete operational real-time environment in several European airports. And we then are able to demonstrate that these solutions are not only operating on paper and in simulations, but even in the real time. So what I try to say by all of this is that we are trying to cover the whole innovation pipeline from the very initial idea until the moment where industry is ready to take it over, to commercialize it. And what I also would like to insist on, in our projects, we are having a good mix of people, of researchers and operational practical people. So we have real ETCOs, real pilots, real engineers, operational engineers in the projects, which allow this dialogue between the good idea, the needs of the sector, and to make something useful in the end for the sector. Yeah. And if I may, then maybe go a bit further in this direction, because indeed we are linking our individual projects very much to our program and to the policy priorities defined by the European Union. In the area of transport, we have the sustainable and smart mobility strategy. So the words speak for themselves: sustainable mobility, smart mobility, which is again this twin revolution of sustainability, digitalization. We are, of course, also part of the European Green Deal. I mean, transport sector, the aviation sector have to make a considerable contribution to decarbonizing, to become greener. And then we are also, of course, fully part of the policy Europe Fit for the Digital Age, and digitalization is one of the leitmotifs, one of the strong elements. And basically both angles, the sustainable angle and the digitalization angle, are reinforcing. It's the same coin. So the more digital we are, the more sustainable we are, and vice versa.
I just wanted to come back to one of the things you mentioned before when it concerns the project. Say you talked about demonstrators, you talked about fast track. I mean, the fast track, let's call it procedure, how does it work for a project to kind of get a fast track treatment? Is there something we can tell about it?
Absolutely. And so it's something we are testing right now, because we have done our first call and we have published our first call results. And by the way, we have selected 48 projects worth 350 million euro investment, which I think is a very cool figures to say that our program is up and running. And within these 48 projects, some of them are indeed have been selected under the fast track procedure, which means is they are starting at a rather low technological readiness level, which we call TUV, which is at the end of exploratory research. But they are confident that over the next 3 years, they would reach a very high technological readiness level, which is 7, which really means being tested in an operational environment. So it works in this way that we are offering this opportunity to project promoters. They are coming and under the open calls, they are sending in their suggestions, their proposals. We are working with independent experts to evaluate, to assess these projects as to their quality, how they fit with the overall program, the objectives. And we had a very nice turnout, a lot of good projects, high quality project, and we have selected the best, and the best ones are right now starting in execution. So the results we will see only in two years and a half, but we are very confident, judging on the proposals we have seen, that this fast track is a very strong part of our new innovation pipeline.
Cool. One of the things you mentioned, I think, it links also back into to my next question is, I think it was related to the demonstrators that you, for testing purposes, you really seek dialogue with all the key users, because when people think CSIR undertaking, you mostly think the big civil aviation authorities or the ANSPs. You think of the big names, which we can't mention because there are too many just to name them. But what I often see is, so you have that, the link up that you go much further than just those groups. But also what I see in a lot of airports and also a lot of discussions I had is that you sometimes have a kind of a disconnect between what's happening on the ANSP level, the big names, but also the airports, the pilots, ground handling. There is not always, let's say, a very well-connected approach between all the people that kind of influence what is happening in the sky, but mostly also on the ground. What you do with demonstrators is that part of the exercise to make people work better together and to test things so that they are really accepted by all? Is that part of the exercise as to how we can Definitely. Find the connectivity between all the players?
Definitely, it is part of our exercise and of our approach also to it. I mean, we are lucky that we're having the different aviation actors working together in our joint undertaking. They are co-owning it, and they're also co-managing it, and they're also co-creating the content. And I think the sector has also learned over the last crisis the necessity to work even more together. I think the COVID crisis, when all of a sudden the sector were faced from a booming 2019 year into a disastrous stop of almost all activities beside cargo and maybe some business and so on, and then also the difficult recovery from this, and now the new issue, the war in Ukraine with 20% of European airspace closed, the economic consequences of high fuel prices and so on and so forth, and inflation and so on. I think the sector is also realizing that they can only survive and grow and offer a good aviation service to the customers if they are working together. And I think, again, digitalization is the tool, because in the end, we are all managing data. Airports are managing a lot of data. Airlines are managing a lot of data. Air traffic management, ANSPs are managing a lot of data. Eurocontrol is managing a lot of data as flow manager or whatever it is. And in the end, it is very important that we are sharing, the right people are sharing the right data with the right quality at the right moment. And this is basically what we are organizing very much. And the cooperation in terms of content is really increasing. So, for example, communication between the airplane and the ground, and data exchange and automatic data exchange. So not radio, the controller speaking to the pilot, but having this in a digital way of communication is the future, what we call also trajectory-based operations, where we really think we can do much better in terms of optimum trajectory from a green perspective, from a safety perspective, but also from from a workload capacity perspective for the controller. And the same applies for the airport, for example. Within the airport community, we have seen some unfortunate situations in Europe last summer for lack of staff, whether it is ground handlers, whether it's security, whether it's border control. And they're also exchanging information, which passengers are at which moment, at which gate, in which part of the airport, what are the needs, how do we cater for them, when is the plane ready for pushback, are we waiting for the last passenger. I mean, all this is very necessary information to be shared between the different systems, because all the bits and pieces in different systems managed by different actors of the chain, and bringing this together, and I know airports are investing a lot into this, because it's also for them very important to offer a good travel experience to the passenger and to be able to help the passenger find his or her way to the gate and having a good experience. So I think digitalization will help the sector to work more together, and the resilience, the scalability, the flexibility to adapt to a changing environment. I don't hope we're having a next crisis, but nobody can exclude it. And maybe even we have no crisis and just growth, but the ability to cater also for growth, it's important to manage together.
What's happening now and how all the stakeholders are working together, we are on the right track to do more of that, not less of that.
Yeah, I think the crux is then a bit from, let's say, doing a demonstrator and convincing the people in the demonstrators that it works, still to implement it. Because this, of course, requires more decisions. It requires an investment decision by different operators. It sometimes requires a safety regulator like EASA to also make sure that the procedures or the solutions are okay from a safety regulatory aspect. From time to time, we need standards, we need EuroCAE, and we are doing this work in parallel, that the standards are also there to help the investors to implement it in an acceptable way. But I mean, the investment is also something that the different elements are, the different actors are taking the right investment decisions. And in particular, if you have to coordinate, I mean, if air ground communication, if all the airplanes are equipped and the ground is not equipped, it doesn't work. If the ground is perfectly equipped, the airplanes are not equipped, it doesn't work. And in the end, also looking at the life cycle of investments, an airplane once in service is flying, I don't know, 25, 30 years, depends, maybe not with the same airline, but as a plane, it will fly some 25 years, and you will not easily retrofit it. So you have also to see that you're working with a heterogeneous fleet of aircraft. So it will have some which are equipped with the latest technology in terms of communication, and this is a very good percentage. With them, you can do this communication more easily, and this percentage will grow over time. So what is the right growth factor in there? And the same then for the ground. We will probably also see investments not in everybody on the 1st of January will have the same tools available. Some ANSPs will go quicker, some centers it's more easy or more necessary from a capacity angle to invest. So this patchwork is also something we are managing. There is, I don't know whether you're familiar with the CESAR Deployment Manager, which is our sister organization, so to say, which is dealing with deployment, and where they are having a regulatory framework which is called Common Project One, where for certain of our solutions there is a mandatory deployment, because it has to be ensured that by a certain end date all concerned actors have the right equipment in place. And there are also then some financial incentives from the infrastructure program of the European Union to help the actors to take the right investment. So this synchronized and harmonized investment over the EU by the right actors is a difficult...
My very last question, because we have already gone through quite some questions and answers. It's about the major trends. It might sound a bit boring, but it's always the question I end with. It's what you see as what you think are the major trends for the coming years. Of course, we've talked a lot about sustainability. We have talked a lot about digitalization. Are there other LF elements, kind of trends we need to be aware of, or what you think will be quite critical going forward?
Well, indeed, we touched upon some elements, like you said, sustainability. I think also this element of resilience and scalability that the sector will be able to adapt more quickly to changing situations, like we have seen from COVID and the war in Ukraine. But let me give you a couple of other elements. I think in the aviation context, it has to be said, and it should be said, that one of our main trends is to keep our safety level. I think the safety of aviation in Europe is very, very high, and we can be proud of this, but it's also something we have to maintain, we want to maintain. So this deserves, I think, a mention. Another element is certainly, and I touched upon it a little bit, the new entrance. I think we will really see new objects flying. We will see drones, and not the small drones we might use for leisure during our weekends, but drones delivering medical equipment, drones doing inspections of pipelines, of forest fires, whatever it is. So bigger drones, and there are many, many very useful use cases already. And there might be even also commercial applications for delivering commercial goods under circumstances. And then, of course, the urban air mobility, so the eVTOLs. And we will probably see, as from next year, either in Europe or outside Europe, the first air taxis flying, first with pilots, but at a certain moment, the business idea behind is, of course, also flying without a pilot in a fully automated way. We will also see new airplanes, either by hydrogen or by electric. This takes a couple of more years to go, but they will also fly in a different way than our current airplanes we are used to. They will maybe have other takeoff and landing features and so on. And operate maybe at another altitude to be seen. And this is still research. And then, of course, we're having more traffic at the higher altitude and with space. Even in Europe, we will have more spaceports and more traffic into the space. And therefore, I think the integration of all these actors with their different needs, their different features, whether they are piloted remotely or with a pilot on board, what level of automation, what level of communication with the environment they are offering, is very, very important. And if I may give you a last one, I think also we should look in a more multimodal perspective and in a door-to-door perspective, both for the passengers and our cargo. So we should not only look only aviation, airport gate to airport gate. We should really look, what is the passenger? What is the one expecting a cargo? What does he want from the transport system? And what kind of service, what quality, what footprint, what price he's ready to offer? And we are also working on multimodality, in particular for passengers, where we are trying to work also together with our colleagues in the railway joint undertaking, in the end, to offer the best travel experience to our citizens in Europe.
Yeah, that will be an interesting one, because if you also have to link up to the stakeholders on the railway side, that's another dimension that that needs to be added there. But no, it's quite interesting. And I love the kind of perspective that you're not limiting only to the aviation specific segment, but that you're also taking in the kind of distribution of goods and then the other means of transportation. It means that we're much more open than we were ever before. So that's a healthy, let's say, looking forward. No,
and
great.
We are research and innovation, so we have the liberty, yes, also to think a bit beyond the usual, yeah, boxes and silos. And if we might find good solutions, hopefully the different silos and sectors are ready to look into them and consider them for implementation.
Correct. And it also makes sense because, of course, you're linked in some way to let's say, the transportation part of the EU. And that's, of course, always wider than pure aviation or railways or other modes of transportation. So, no, cool. Well, thank you very much for your time today and your preparation time. That is very much appreciated. I find it extremely interesting and also kind of the different dimension, the different perspectives. Aviation is important, but of course, looking to the next level of what, well, what will be next, I think is as important. And it's cool to understand the role you're playing in this. So thank you again for your much appreciated time. And
thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This podcast has been brought to you by Emma Systems. Emma helps airport to optimize their ground operations by correlating real-time data through AI, including ACDM. You can visit www.emma.euro to find out more.